He's live from Bristol. Let's welcome him back to the programme. Always good to be chatting with our friend Tony Gosling. Welcome back, my friend. How are you doing?
Hi, Richie. Yeah, I'm doing fine. Thanks very much for inviting me.
Lovely to have you on. And I couldn't have picked a better day to invite you on, because the BBC and Sky are reporting that German doctors have declared that the Russian opposition politician Alexei Navalny was poisoned with a member of the Novichok Norwegian group. What do you think? Was he?
Well, first of all, this Novichok stuff, I don't think we need to worry too much about it, do we? Because it doesn't seem to kill people, even though nerve agents are the most powerful killers apparently on the planet. Novichok doesn't really seem to do what it says on the tin, does it?
No, it doesn't. And just before you came on, we were listening to the dulcet tones of Sky correspondent Martin Brunt talking about the Ballad of Dawn Sturgis, the woman whom it allegedly did kill, who got it in a perfume bottle given to her by her boyfriend, who got it from a skip and thought he'd pull a fast one by saying, "Here's some perfume I bought you." And she ended up killing herself with Novichok. What's going on here? They must know that this isn't flying, this Novichok nonsense. Why are they pursuing it?
I don't think she did die of Novichok. I think she died of fentanyl poisoning. At least that's what sources I have in Wiltshire have told me. And also the police, Wiltshire Constabulary, I think it was around about a week or so before this was announced. It was after the Skripal so-called poisoning. In fact, I think really the whole Skripal thing should be a kind of missing persons case, not a Novichok poisoning case. Getting to the nub of the Skripal business, looks to me, and there was a thing in the Independent which said that he was planning to go back to Russia. In other words, he'd had enough of the Brits and MI6 and the intelligence services here. Now, that would be a very good reason to keep him in the country, because they didn't want him on the television over there talking about things like the Steele dossier and the other things, because he was linked up with Christopher Steele very closely, the guy behind the dossier that was an attempt to take out Trump in the last presidential election campaign over there. So, yeah, Salisbury is a place very close to my heart, having worked there for a year as a BBC reporter. I like to think that there's still at least a little chance that they'll have some real reporting about what happens there. Because, I mean, this Novichok, I have my suspicions about it. I can't stand the story up right now, but I've got some very good evidence. And it's, you know, in the process of maybe in the next few weeks coming out, that this was, and I think I said this to you before, a fake story, that Novichok itself wasn't even a real chemical compound. It was a whole bunch of pages of a formula that was given to Russian Secret Service people by the Russian FSB, etc., or whatever they were at the time, KGB or something, I think it was the FSB, in order to see if a particular person they suspected was feeding stuff to the Brits and the Americans. And sure enough, their agents over in this part of the world found this stuff turning up, so they were able to pin So in other words, it was basically bait for someone to think this is worth money, this is a good and real, and to feed it to the West. So there must be only a handful of people in the world, Richie, that really know whether Novichok is even a real substance or not. And it might be the Russians are sitting there biding their time, thinking at some point in the future we can explain and tell to the world that this stuff never really existed at all. So, I mean, certainly the effects of it don't seem to be too bad. And the other thing, I am worried for Navalny's health, because it's quite feasible he may even possibly be killed in Germany, and it blamed on the Russians then.
Couple of interesting things there. I like what you said about the missing person story. Why the Skripals haven't surfaced anywhere or given any live television interviews to anybody in recent times, that's a mystery, and it's very hard to explain. But speaking of journalists and doing their job, Frank Gardner, longtime security correspondent with the BBC, kind of did his job this afternoon when he told Simon McCoy, listen, this opposition politician, Navalny, has got a lot of enemies in business in Russia. And he also pointed out, did Frank Gardner, to his credit, he pointed out that when Navalny's missus, when his better half, said to Putin, "I want to get him out of the country to Germany," Putin said, "No problem."
I would compare this to the Boris Nemtsov killing, which was on a bridge in Moscow. I think it was 2015. Yeah. The guy was assassinated. Nemtsov, this is when the RT used to have me on a little bit more regularly. I got a call just a couple of hours after the assassination to go on and discuss it. And I think what happens is every now and again, these so-called great opposition leaders in Russia, which actually Navalny and Nemtsov were, neither of them, really contenders, but the Western press paints them as that. There are a couple of major parties in the Duma who are the main opposition to Putin and are in a position to stand a presidential candidate, for example, that might beat Putin. But these two were definitely neither of them were really opposition. They are what they're talked of is opposition figures, but they have no real chance of actually doing anything to topple Putin. They're there really to, I suppose, appear on the Western press and to talk about this kind of thing, but actually not to have any real effect. And so these people are in a bit of a dangerous position, particularly with Nemtsov, because he was saying publicly in Moscow, this is the previous guy, that he wouldn't take any funding from any outside country. And this, of course, starts to open a little bit of a can of worms in Russia, saying, well, actually, some of these opposition figures are taking money from places like the US and Switzerland. Yeah. Of course, this means potentially also things like the British Council, which are set up to do this sort of thing. You know, soft power, it's called. So you'll get, you know, bits of the Foreign Office budget going to fund opposition movements in, I mean, obviously there's the Soros's as well, but this is the official thing. And so he announced back in 2015, we're not taking any money from any foreigner at all, and no foreign influence whatsoever in our party. And this, of course, showed that that was what was going on in opposition, small opposition parties like his. In fact, they were paying, the Americans were paying for whole troops of people who were, you know, otherwise would be unemployed in Moscow to go around handing out leaflets for this party. And I think that's potentially why he was killed by the West, for showing up the fact that, that this is going on, that the Western powers are actually interfering in Russian politics, which, of course, we always hear the opposite. Now, as for Navalny, he's a similar figure. He stood as mayor of Moscow, lost. He's obviously he's a media figure, but he doesn't really stand any chance of taking power from Putin. Very, very unlikely. But he's constantly held up by the West as part of this thing called Operation Beluga. I would repeat, Operation Beluga. Yeah. Which was revealed by a French ex-secret service guy, is the NATO codename for amongst the NATO countries, that's in the US and Europe. Of the plot to, well, it's a program, it's a very well-funded program to smear Putin and to smear his party in Russia in order to really discredit Russia as a country. And I just spoke yesterday, Richie, to an American, ex-American, well, he lives in Britain now, but he's a massive big fan of the Russians, and he gets on really, really well with them, as so many people do. Anyone that's actually visited Moscow realizes these people are streets ahead of the rest of the world. They've got a fantastic civilization there, brilliant restaurants, coffee shops. And you know what struck me more than anything else in Moscow is the young people have all got a smile on their face. They feel like the world's their oyster. They've got opportunities to get work, to get ahead, to start businesses, and to really get things moving in Russia. They almost all speak English. So it's a fantastic place, Russia. I would suggest people go and visit it while they still can, if you possibly can, because almost all of this stuff, I think, is part of this pathetic Operation Beluga to smear Russia and to smear Putin specifically.
I think Putin is a gangster. I like what Russia has done in Syria. I like the way it's put a big stumbling block in the way of the US, French, Israeli plans. Listen, I agree. But I think, let me finish. I think he's a gangster. Yeah. Listen, if I was Putin and I knew that figures in my country were working with the West to undermine me, I'm not a man of violence. I could understand taking action against him. Putin is basically an old spook and he's a gangster. Why can we not believe that Putin, knowing that this guy is part of attempts to smear him and a central figure in Operation Beluga, why wouldn't Putin want to kill the guy?
Because if he's got evidence of that, then he could easily make sure he was put on trial and he could make a whole kind of judicial victory out of it. I mean, this is not the way of Putin. I mean, there's been a lot, for example, Anna Politkovskaya, the journalist who in the Western media is constantly blamed. Putin is constantly blamed for her murder. Well, she got out of a lift and some guy, hitman, murdered her in a lift. You really think that's the way that the Russian state would kill somebody? She had been uncovering all sorts of interesting stories about poisoning with all sorts of nerve agents and similar substances of children in Chechen schools. And this, of course, wasn't Putin doing this. This was Berezovsky and the oligarchy who wanted to kick off the war in Chechnya. And that was the reason, I think, that she was killed, is because, yes, she was being critical of Putin, but she was also being critical of the oligarchs. And they're far more dangerous. They are effectively the Russian mafia. And if you're criticising them, you're much more likely to be shot as you walk out of a lift.
Well, that's the point. It's interesting you said that's the point that Frank Gardner made today. If this guy was poisoned, maybe it was some business figure that wanted him dead, because whatever about him being part of Operation Beluga, the Western attempt to smear Vladimir Putin, there's no doubt that Navalny was digging into oligarchs, movements, certain oligarchs and their movements of money laundering and whatnot. So maybe the guy was attacked in some way by somebody not connected to Putin. It's a strange story, and of course we'll never know the truth of it. But I like your theory.
Listen, I don't agree. This we'll never know. There are people out there that do know.
Yeah, they're not going to tell me though.
You never know, because sometimes things change. You know, the tectonic plates shift. The chessboard moves, or something else moves on the chessboard, and suddenly the people that know about it think, well, we've got something to gain by making this public. So I don't think, never say never.
Tony Gosling is our guest. We've got Tony till around about 5 minutes, 10 minutes past the top of the hour. Piers Corbyn joins us a bit later on. Great to have Tony back on. Not spoken in a few weeks. I've been away, of course. You'd only come back yourself from your travels. Your extraordinary adventures, of course, in New Zealand in the middle of all the COVID stuff, which we spoke about last time. People should listen to that episode if they missed that. It's fascinating stuff. We're just plunging headlong towards... I mean, the Daily Mail is full of stories today. I know it's the Mail, but a broken clock is right twice a day. The government wants to bring in digital IDs for everybody. We're looking at digital health passports. The Premier League in the United Kingdom, the football authorities, have said they're looking at allowing people back to football if those people can show that they're healthy. The health secretary says he wants to be testing 4 million people a day, meaning that ultimately, eventually, they want everybody to be tested regularly in order to prove that you're okay to move around. We're heading for planet dystopia, Tony, aren't we?
We certainly are. And that's certainly where they want to send us. We had a lovely demonstration here in Bristol on Sunday. And, of course, there was the fantastic demo in Trafalgar Square on Saturday at which Piers Corbyn was arrested.
Yeah.
You know, it does seem to me that there is a fascinating kind of kickback starting against all this, though, Richie. And, you know, obviously, there are people that want to impose this digital ID. This was what was talked about right at the very start. I can't remember what it was called now, but anyway, ID something or other, and that was at the very start, event 201, that's right, ID 2020, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the idea really was to have a passport for immunity. So if you've had a vaccination, then you get the passport. If you haven't had the vaccination, you don't get the passport. You can't go back to normal. And there was that terrific article from Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Well, it was a hideous article, but it was actually revealing entirely the plan from the dark side, which was the idea that you're not going back to normal. So you will go back to normal eventually. And let's not forget, we were told it was going to be a 3-week lockdown. Of course, that was a lie. But you're only going to go back to normal if you do as we say. And that means you've got to have this kind of digital passport to do everything. And I think we're definitely heading down that road. But there's obviously some kind of pushback. We've just had the announcement in the last day or so that the British government is now out to consultation. And I would encourage people to respond to that consultation. You know, in whatever way they feel, but it's obvious. What they're saying is, we believe that the government in the UK should indemnify any vaccine manufacturer against any death or injury that comes from a COVID vaccine. So there is a little battle going on there. There's a point of struggle there. Is the government going to do this? Because if they do, of course, the vaccine companies have got nothing to lose. They're not, by the way, hard up. They're extremely wealthy, these big pharma businesses. So if their vaccine does kill people, and if it does cause any permanent harm or even temporary harm, we should all be able to sue them, big class actions, and take them out potentially forever. So they need to be thinking about that when they're rolling a vaccine out on the market, and when they're using their little puppets in the regulators to say, oh, this is all okay at the Department for Health and Social Care. And I think that's quite an important little item to sort of stick up on the agenda there.
Very important. I saw that consultation document they are proposing, also to roll out the vaccine through avenues that were previously unimagined. So getting physiotherapists and other occupational type people to deliver the vaccine, as opposed to your nurse or your doctor.
But well, the GP should do this. If you want the vaccine, you should go to your GP and you should say, I want the vaccine. Why does the government have to do all this stuff and to get other, you know, all these other non-doctors to be actually prescribing and administering a vaccine? It doesn't. And anyway, we don't need it. This is the key thing. This, I think the research is pretty conclusive. D614G, which is a mutation of COVID-19, is the main thing circulating in Europe apparently at the moment, according to the Singapore. There's a lot of it in Southeast Asia too. Now, this mutation, does suggest that this thing was a bioweapon, and that a bit by bit, over the last few months, it's become less effective, because that's what basically happens. It just mutates, it degrades. If it's a bioweapon, it's not going to be as powerful as when you first prepared it. And this stuff is, I think, what's being tested for now. People are circulating with it. The only trouble is it hardly causes any health effects. So people have got COVID-19, but they've got a denuded strain of it, which is almost certainly not going to kill them. I mean, the propaganda is absolutely over the top, isn't it? We're seeing every night still the total death figure, 41,000, blah, blah. And yet, actually, that means here in Bristol, we had one person die with COVID-19, not of COVID-19, with pre-existing health conditions in Southmead Hospital. And it was like one of the main news stories in the whole region.
They're deliberately finding cases of COVID in people that don't even know they have it. You had Nicky Campbell on Radio 5 Live yesterday morning talking about his daughter, Tony, who's 21. She had it, he said. It didn't even brush her. She felt a bit tired for a day. Yes, man, I was screaming at the fucking radio, excuse my language, in the park on my walk. I said, that's the whole point. The vast majority of people, it runs through them. They don't know anything about it. And Trump, as crazy and as ridiculous as Donald Trump is, and I have no time for him, he was right weeks ago when he said, if you keep testing, you're going to find more cases. Of course you are. In asymptomatic people who there's nothing wrong with them. It's this. Can't explain it to people.
The other really important story that came out last week, just a little blip, was, and of course it then gets totally forgotten, was not one healthy child has died of COVID-19 in the UK. Okay, so that's just a little teeny story there. So that means that we've locked down these schools for nothing. Obviously, kids who are ill, they may not be going to school very regularly anyway. But and obviously, we need to, you know, keep them away, that sort of thing. But not one single healthy child died. That was one of the news stories. I saw it in the Times, but then I saw it online elsewhere. So we've shut our schools for 6 months for nothing.
Yeah.
I actually spoke to a policeman about this with our demonstration we did here in Bristol on Sunday, the Stand Up Bristol demo, and he looked at me and he smiled and he chuckled and he said, well, sorry, but that is a bit above my pay grade. And you know, obviously I think the police aren't particularly interested in weighing in on all this. We had the Police Federation originally, when they brought in the mask mask edicts, saying that it was absurd to expect police to enforce this. That was the Police Federation. So we've seen all sorts of evidence that the police aren't really that interested. Even when Piers Corbyn was arrested, the Federation leaked something, which they don't usually do, to one of the major papers. I can't remember which one it was now at the weekend, saying that, well, this, the orders for this came from on high. They never normally do that. What they're doing is they're saying, look, guys, we don't actually agree with Piers's arrest. This is a political decision, and that is a decision which probably won't have been made with her, but it would have been signed off directly by Priti Patel. I can tell you that now. Piers Corbyn's arrest was something that Priti Patel decided, we're going to arrest this guy. And if they'd left it, if she should not be doing that, if they'd left it to the Metropolitan Police, Piers would almost certainly not have been arrested.
Yeah, because speaking to him on the phone the other day, and he's going to be on with us in about 20 minutes' time, he echoed, well, he said what you said there, and he was convinced of that, because the police were pretty amiable on the scene in terms of they were happy enough for people to do what people were doing and just let them get on with it. Priti Patel, of course, should be hanging from her ankles in the Tower of London as for treason. The woman who went to Israel and met with Israeli government officials while she was International Development Secretary, I think, and neglected to tell her boss. That's treason.
Yeah, been on holiday.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably one of those jollies that the Israeli embassy organised, and it was all totally off the books. Now, this is extremely dodgy. You can't be doing that sort of thing when you're a government minister.
It's treason.
So she should never be given office again. She's a sort of Mandelson character, I think. She's one of those people that everybody can see is a crook, but she has decided, right, I think maybe everyone's forgotten about that now, so let's try her. Now, this does smack to me, Richie, this is a really good thing, of desperation. I think they're desperate. Reusing soiled goods in terms of Priti Patel does smack of desperation to me.
I'm walking around Salford, and I pop in and out of different shops, and I'm glad to report that nobody's wearing masks. Nobody. and people behind shop counters are not asking anybody about masks. The pharmacy, which is run by a lovely Jewish guy around the corner, same thing. You go in there, nobody's saying anything. I like that. I really do. And maybe there's a lot to be said for what you've just said, that they're beginning to panic, because that's pushback in and of itself when people are just quietly disobeying and saying, no, feck you, we won't wear the masks, we won't socially distance. I mean, the cheek of these bastards, Tony. Who do they think they are? Nicola Sturgeon going on television. Oh, from tomorrow, you can meet your next door neighbour in your garden. Who the fuck are you to be telling us what we can do and who we can have dinner with?
Yeah,
but, you know,
I mean,
quietly,
also,
people are ignoring it. Sorry for ranting there. Go ahead.
At the same time, she is in the middle of a horrific prosecution of Craig Murray, the former ambassador to Uzbekistan, who just announced today that his legal bill, something, I think it was around £60,000-£70,000. So, you know, if you basically, if you've got a house or if you've got some property behind you of any sort, they will take you out. Now, this is the sort of third world country idea that if someone is a political opposition, what you do is you destroy them economically. And that's exactly what they're doing to Craig Murray. They're trying to strip him of his property in order for him to actually be able to defend himself against trumped up charges. So, you know, it's the old eye of Sauron again. First of all, it was shining on poor old Alex Salmond with all these fake trumped up charges. And now he's walked free back onto Russia Today, which I think was actually the real original reason why they did it. They do not want these dissidents in the West. Of course, you know, this is an old Soviet expression, isn't it? But the Western dissidents, they don't want them to have a voice. And of course, he got a voice on RT. But now that Alex has proved his innocence, and imagine the Scottish taxpayers picked up the bill for his legal costs, Craig Murray has got to find the money to defend himself. Who is it going to be next? Anybody that defends people like Julian Assange or Craig Murray, you know, the chilling effect is enormous. So anyone is thinking to themselves, well, if I kind of help legally Craig Murray, then I will be next in line. And this is a horrific, horrific puritanical attitude that we're seeing from totally heartless and soulless from Nicola Sturgeon. So Scotland really is becoming actually quite a fascistic country with an oligarchic leader. And I don't think the ordinary Scottish people are up for this. I think they'd hoof her out, given half a chance, if there was an election in the next few months.
I mean, that little bastard, that's all she is. I'm sorry now for carrying on with this. How dare you go on television and say to people, if it feels normal, there's something wrong. I mean, these people are sick, Tony. They're beyond sick. And you wonder how compromised they are, these people who go along with it. You know that Boris Johnson and Nicola Sturgeon and that goon in Ireland, Micheál Martin, and that fuckwit in France, you know that they know what we know. They know that this is a farce. Why do they carry on with it? Because they must be compromised up to the gills.
I see increasingly what we're getting as so-called political leaders like Sturgeon or these kind of Biden characters that cannot function without an auto cue. I'd love to see it if there was a few drops of water fell onto her script that she's reading Sturgeon, and suddenly, you know, she can't actually read a script. She would just start corpsing. She wouldn't know what to say. She'd say something like, switch the cameras off. You know, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. These people are not speaking from the heart, Richie. They're just reading a script. This is effectively where we are with people like her. And the actual measures that they're taking are ridiculous. They're way over the top. And she's just flexing her political muscles. It's despotism, really, that we're seeing from people like her at the moment.
And you know, it's the arbitrary nature of it that should be getting through to people by now. If you've got a reasonable ability to think for yourself, you've got to be saying to yourself, even if you never heard Tony Gosling's radio show, even if you never heard of this radio show, you must be, or others, you must be now looking at TV thinking, this is bollocks, this arbitrary nonsense. Go on, Tony.
The worst thing is this whole chloroquine scandal, because we know for a fact that at least 30% of people who actually contract this original COVID-19, you know, the really deadly one, could have been saved by this. And yet the authorities have deliberately stopped it, doctors prescribing it, made it very difficult for doctors to prescribe it, even if they wanted to. So there's been basically a shot across the doctor's bowels. If you prescribe this, you could get into trouble. But we know, if you look at the research on this, SARS was cured by chloroquine in many, many cases, and it was a prescribed medicine for SARS. What was COVID-19 called originally? Oh, SARS-CoV-2. So it was going to be one of the most obvious things to use. It does certainly seem as if it's, I'm not a doctor, but looking at all of these reports, it certainly seems that it's been helping people, if not saving their lives, and yet we're told we can't use it. So look, this is getting into a very, very deep, dark world where these big pharmaceutical companies have effectively taken over the regulation of their industry, their own industry, and they are basically using those regulators in order to enable maximization of their power in the world and their profits. So the government is really on the back foot. The elected governments around the world are on the back foot. The people who are really pushing this are the minted Gates Foundation and World Health Organization. Those, I think, are the people who are really in the driving seat now. And, of course, this is private corporations taking over from elected governments right around the world.
Do you know what's sickening about yesterday was, I talked about this, I grabbed this, I was lucky to see this yesterday, I was just lucky to grab it. But Matt Hancock obviously addressed the House of Commons yesterday, you know this. And in the process of doing that, he talked about the drug regulatory agency here, which is the MHRA. And he waxed lyrical about how independent it is. I mean, this is a bold, naked lie. Only last September, the MHRA put out a press release thanking the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for giving it nearly $400,000 so that it could do research into helping women in their pregnancy trimesters, giving them the right drugs. They're not independent. And Matt Hancock knows this. And nobody in the House of Commons had the balls to say, hang on, pal, they're not independent. They're not. You know, they're directly connected to the WHO through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
The House of Commons came back today, didn't it? And I was just listening to Prime Minister's questions. None of these politicians have got anything to say. The politicians have got nothing to say. As far as I'm concerned, they're all fussing about things that don't matter. They're not addressing the nub of the issue at all. And that's why I think I'm quite concerned about where we're heading with this. It seems to me like we're almost in a kind of beginning of the end situation, a fight or flight kind of, you know, is democracy actually over? Is there really no people power left? Are the politicians actually just now completely captured by big business, by the city? Where are we heading with all this? There's obviously economic collapse and war potentially hovering in the background that might come along at any time. And obviously that will happen at a time to benefit the rich and powerful, the super rich, you know, the people who live on Corfu, where we had that horrific accident yesterday with a bunch of lads just driving straight into someone and mashing her to pieces. They may get off. Well, let's see. They were English. They were Brits. This is the island where the Rothschilds have a little home. There's a lot of people, rich oligarchs, live on Corfu. Who knows who was involved in that? They haven't yet revealed that one. But that's what bothers me. But the positive side, I suppose, Richie, it was just so lovely here to have our little gathering. It was only about 200 people in Bristol's Castle Park on Sunday. And it was just a fantastic atmosphere. We had various people popping up out of nowhere. One woman did a super, super poem that she'd written called Bill Gates is Not the Messiah. And if you go on to social media, I'll share it on your thing. It's just such a lot of fun. And this, to me, says it all. For example, we had a beautiful sunny day yesterday. When Greta Thunberg came, it was pouring with rain. These things cheer me up, you know?
Yeah.
All that publicity behind her and everything. And, of course, the local newspapers, the local TV, etc., don't report any of our stuff. It seems to me we've got various protest movements going on, haven't we? We've got the Antifa, it's probably the smallest one. We've also got XR and Black Lives Matter. These guys are the ones that the press here, I don't know about in other parts of the country, but the Black Lives Matter protest in Bristol that ended up with the Colston statue falling was plugged on the TV news the Thursday night and the Friday night, and then the protest happened on the Saturday or the Sunday, I can't remember now. But anyway, 2 or 3 days before, it's been plugged on the television, right? Ours wasn't even mentioned on the TV the day it happened. So there are media hyped demos and there are unmedia hype demos, and I would much prefer to be on the latter, because I think we're looking at all sorts of forms of controlled opposition. At last, I think a real opposition is emerging, and it's a sort of it's not left and right. It's ordinary folks are coming out saying, well, actually, we don't believe in all this kind of divide and rule tactics. These idea of trying to get poor black people fighting poor white people, it's not going to work with us. And it was a terrific demonstration. The sun was shining all day long.
Brilliant. I love that reference to Thunberg coming in and it chucking it down out of the heavens. She's been fairly quiet of late, I suppose, the whole COVID thing. Can I just ask you before we wrap it up today, thanks for coming back on. Tony Gosling, Bristol, thisweek.org.uk, bilderberg.org is a website that you should have pinned to your, not to your taskbar, but you should have it saved on your homepage there. It's a brilliant resource. If you're not familiar with the Bilderberg Group, check it out. I think it's about time, by the way, because it's been so long since we did it, that you and I do a special program where we talk about the genesis, the origin of the Bilderberg Group, and because you're an amazing resource on that alone, but on many things. But before I forget to ask you what I wanted to ask you, you talked about RT and how it has been a very refreshing. I talk up RT all the time. I don't think it's done itself great credit during the COVID thing, but I'm being a bit pernickety maybe. Look, I like RT, but I fear, and I hope I'm not, you know, bringing this closer by saying it out loud, but I think its Ofcom license will be gone really soon. I think they're gearing up to get rid of him.
They have obviously cut their coat to, or cut their cloth to suit their coat, or whatever the expression
is.
Yeah,
cut the cloth to fit their measure. Yeah.
But we're going to actually tone things down a bit because we don't want to lose the license. They also did in 2015. They changed a lot. The whole of RT, if people didn't notice, around about 2015, when the Russians went into Syria, completely changed its profile. That's when I stopped appearing on there, and it became a much more Western-friendly, you know, going along with all the COVID stuff, even though actually the lockdown in Russia was much less. So I think there's been, I mean, RT, I got to know some of the people who are running it. I mean, a lot of them had never worked in such a big organization. And of course, there isn't the community memory of the producers and the editors that there was certainly when I first turned up at the BBC in the 1980s, of how to really do good, balanced professional documentaries, for example. There wasn't that in Russia. And so a lot of them are kind of a bit green. I would also say with RT that, you know, they are. I think they pull their punches on Putin. They really should. And I said this to one of the deputy bosses of RT when I was over there. Look, have a go at Putin from time to time, for goodness sake, because if you do, you'll be more credible internationally. But obviously, they are edicts not to do that. I mean, for example, when I was on discussing, I think it was the Nemtsov killing I was telling you about, I mentioned something about the main opposition being the Communist Party and Zyuganov's Communist Party. And when they put that up on the YouTube after the live thing, that little bit had been edited out. So there's, you know, they're up to tricks just as everyone else. As you said, Putin is a gangster. I think all world leaders are gangsters, but he's made absolutely clear, I am top gangster in Russia. And any of these oligarchs want to try and, you know, make inroads into the Kremlin, influence us, kill people, whatever, bribe, etc., extort the Kremlin, they're going to be out of the country in a flash. Yeah. So he's making sure that he's number one gangster. And I'm afraid that's the way you have to run a country. Otherwise, you're going to be completely subsumed by the financial interests, by the oligarchy, and by the globalists around the world.
Let's continue that another day. Final question, as brief as you can. I'm going to be rebroadcasting you really soon, aren't I? We talked about this. No?
Sorry?
I'm going to be rebroadcasting you and your program really soon. We touched on this last time, yeah. No, for listeners, for people who listen to Tony, when Tony broadcasts on Fridays, it's generally Fridays that he broadcasts, but we're going to take the program and maybe run it on Sunday morning after Sunday View. Is that what we said we would do, I think?
That'd be lovely, yeah. It'd be so sweet of you to do that. And I think, in a way, we need a kind of what used to be called a web ring in the 90s of people like Anna Breeze, you know, yourself, Jason Burmes in the US. You know, there are various of us that are right on the case with all this. So I think it just makes sense to almost pass the parcel. You never know, we might even end up with a network of our own.
I know, you've got to be careful when you talk networks, because when you say network, that's when Ofcom gets involved and tells you need a license.
But, maybe we'll be a guerrilla network, a pirate radio network.
Yeah. I love that, guerrilla broadcasting. Tony, thanks for coming back on today. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to the next time.
We need to be a little bit concerned about further pandemics too, which I haven't seen anyone looking at that. So we may have, you know, new viruses, possibly genetically engineered, and also be really careful, because I'm seeing a lot of image manipulation out there. Fantastic amount of money is being put into psychological warfare operations to con people with videos and stills that have been image manipulated. So just, you know, take a step back from it if you think that looks a bit strange and wonder, well, maybe I'm being had here.
Good stuff, mate. Thanks for coming on today. Tony Gosling, great to have him back on live from Bristol. And he'll be back on again real soon. Great reporter, Tony. Thanks for coming on today.